Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to call the hearing back to order in HP09-001, matter of TransCanada Keystone XL project. Staff, we're at the point of concluding your direct case. Are you ready to proceed?
We are ready, and Mr. Kenyon is here, so I would call Mr. Michael Kenyon to the stand.
Raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Good afternoon. Could you please introduce yourself to the commission and give them a little bit of background regarding what you do and where you work?
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Michael Kenyon. I'm the Director of Property and Special Taxes for the South Dakota Department of Revenue and Regulation. As far as my background, I graduated from the University of South Dakota with a double major in criminal justice political science. I moved down to the University of Iowa College of Law, where I got a law degree. I clerked for a trial judge in Minnesota for a year, and then began working for the Department of Revenue as a staff attorney back in 1999. In 2003, I accepted my current position. As I mentioned, I'm the Director of Property and Special Taxes. I collect the state, the alcohol and tobacco taxes for the state, around $150 million, and then handle or administer the state's role in the property tax system.
And did you write and submit pre-filed testimony on this matter?
I did.
And is it there before you?
It is.
And if I asked you those questions today, would you answer them all the same?
I would.
If you could please just give us a brief summary, then, of your testimony.
Well, what I tried to do in this, in my written testimony, is to first give you an overview of how the property tax system works in South Dakota. And then second, I gave sort of an illustrative example of how the taxes, the levies, the taxes collected, and the tax levy rates change as new value is added to the system. I looked at an example of one county, Harding County, and I looked at, I made some assumptions about how the value would change, and then what the various taxing entities would do with that increase in value. I summarized, beginning on page 12, I summarized sort of my illustrative example. I looked at first how much school taxes Keystone XL would pay, and the number that I came up with, the estimate that I came up with, was $713,000 for the Harding County School District. And then I broke out how those taxes work, which are the school general fund taxes, how much is capital outlay, pension, and special ed. For the county taxes, I made sort of a range of estimates. Because of the state's property tax caps, there's some discretion into how much taxes the local entities can generate with their tax base. So I looked at sort of the minimum amount and a maximum amount. Then I chose a number sort of in between. And you can see on page 12 and onto page 13, sort of that range of tax liability for TransCanada.
I have no further questions.
Applicant, Mr. Taylor.
Only one question. Mr. Kenyon, all of the revenue that's developed by ad valorem property taxes assessed against the pipeline in the various counties and school districts will remain with local government, will it not?
That is correct.
Thank you. That's all.
Since Dakota Rural Action is no longer present at the hearing, we'll move on to commissioner and advisor questions. Okay. Commissioner Colbeck.
Yes, Mr. Kenyon. Do you anticipate any problems with gaining the information that you need from TransCanada as far as taxation is concerned?
No. At least we haven't had problems in the past. The state requires this information to be provided to us, and people generally do. We haven't had a situation where we've asked for information or needed information and it wasn't provided to us.
Okay. Have you had any difficulty in dealing with TransCanada on the first pipeline that was permitted in South Dakota?
No.
Okay. Of the assessors and the assessed value, is that done by the counties?
No, the assessment, most of the assessment, most of the property taxes, the value for that is established by the county assessor. TransCanada will be, Keystone XL will be essentially assessed by the Department of Revenue.
Okay, so those will be, there'll be state assessors out there looking strictly at the pipeline, correct?
Exactly. We have one state assessor who does all of our central assessed property.
Okay. Does the land value assessment that the pipeline runs through, is that affected? Or is that still through the county?
The we'll assess the land as well. We'll assess the right-of-way.
Okay, so the right-of-way is centrally assessed along with the pipeline.
Right.
Okay. So does that figure out to be a net decrease for taxes to the landowner? In other words, if that land is centrally assessed, you don't double tax it, do you?
Right. It'll either be centrally assessed or locally assessed, and not both. It's one or the other.
Okay. If it's centrally assessed, does that go to the landowner to pay or to TransCanada to pay?
As far as the value of the central assessment, the taxes from that will be paid by TransCanada.
By TransCanada.
They'll pay the taxes on the value that's established by the department's assessor.
Okay. For strictly the pipeline or the land that runs above it?
For both.
For
TransCanada's valuation of that.
Okay.
For the state's valuation of TransCanada's right-of-way and pipeline.
Okay. So I'm still a little confused in my mind. If you're running a row crop over the top of a pipeline, TransCanada pays for the taxes for that those row crops?
Not exactly. They'll pay for the value of their right-of-way.
Okay, so does the value of that right-of-way get subtracted from the landowner's taxation then? Am I totally confused?
You're starting to totally confuse me, but I think the answer is no. The owner will be valued as sort of the fee simple ownership of that land.
Okay, and I guess maybe I'll rephrase, but if you have a pipeline in the ground and they have an easement, the dirt that's on top of it and the pipeline, that 50-foot section, if the landowner is currently paying for the taxes on that 50-foot section right now, do they continue? Do you understand what I'm trying to say now?
Excellent question. Yeah, okay. I think I've got it. What we'll do is we'll let the county assessor know that that's no longer that land is now being centrally assessed. So that'll be taken off the local property tax rolls, and it'll be centrally assessed.
Okay.
So it won't be sort of double taxed.
Okay. So in effect, the landowner their tax burden could actually decrease. Because, well, some of them, as we heard last night, some of them have, you know, maybe 100 acres, maybe, you know, they may have 1,000 acres.
Yeah.
Would that 1,000 acres of right-of-way that TransCanada purchased, is that 1,000 acres that landowner will not pay now?
I believe the answer to that question is yes. I'm
okay.
About 90% sure. But
okay.
If it's not yes, I'll certainly get back to this commission and re-answer the question or correct my answer. But I believe the answer is yes.
Is yes. Okay. Okay. The valuation of the property, would you say that it's more like a home or is it more like a car? A car's value is obviously going to go down. Is this more assessed like a home where usually a home's value will increase?
It's actually like neither. It's more like the valuation of a business.
Okay.
Where it'll increase or decrease based upon the fortunes of the business.
Okay. When you say fortunes of the business, would that be the oil that flows through the pipeline, or would that be the value of the metal that carries the oil, or both?
It would be depending upon the revenue from the Keystone XL, so how much revenue they're generating,
okay.
Whether they get their money from is there paid to transport the oil? Okay. I think that would be the changes in the fortunes in that respect would change the valuation of the property.
Okay, like a trucker, he owns the truck, but he doesn't own the contents in it, so he's only taxed on the truck.
Right. If that's the way that TransCanada works, if they're like a common carrier, then it'll depend upon what their revenue is.
Okay. Okay. Have you, this is a speculative question, but have you heard numbers that seem to be very consistent in TransCanada's estimates? Do you believe those to be consistent? I can't give you exact numbers, but they're in the millions of dollars. Do you anticipate that this will bring millions of dollars of new tax revenue in?
Certainly millions of dollars. You know, I just did the one estimate for Harding County, and it was over $1 million, I think, between the county taxes and the school taxes.
Okay.
So,
all right, thank you.
Certainly significant taxpayer.
Okay.
So, Mr. Kenyon, when you, because you mentioned in your testimony, and I thought you did a very good job in the first part of your testimony of explaining the difficulty in determining the value of something like this, you know, where you don't have a lot of transaction to determine what the pipeline's worth, and we don't have, you know, flow yet, and price of oil varies. So I thought you did a good job. Because of that earlier testimony, then when you got to the point when you said, I will assume that Keystone XL will add $60 million of value to the tax base of Harding County, I presumed that that number was very hypothetical. Is that less hypothetical and more of an actual guess on your part?
Well, I'm trying to distinguish between a hypothetical and a guess.
I mean, for hypothetical, I thought you were just just pulling a number for illustrative purposes, and so the number might as well have been $10 million as opposed to $60 million. So let me get rid of all that, and I'll just ask the question. Is $60 million your best-case guess at this time for what the valuation in Harding County would be? I'm sorry, the taxable value?
It's not. I'd be very reluctant to make a guess as to what the valuation would be. It was for illustrative purposes.
Well, and the reason I'm asking is there have been some public input meetings where, you know, members of the applicant's team have thrown out numbers. Now, they didn't, you know, hold those numbers up as absolute gospel, but they said, here's what we would estimate. And in some instances, those numbers have been a little higher than the ones you used in your testimony for illustrative purposes. So if this was your best guess, I wanted to dig into it a little bit more, but you're telling me $60 million is not your best guess.
I'd be very reluctant to make a guess. So it's not our best estimation. We didn't go through a sort of a formal process to figure out where we think their value would be. It was sort of a shot in the dark.
Now, part of the commission's part of the applicant's legal burden, you know, is proving that this kind of infrastructure wouldn't interfere with the orderly economic development of the region and that it's good for the inhabitants and all of that wording. I think some people would argue that accurate estimates of benefits on the taxation side are part of that evaluation of orderly economic development. I'm kind of inclined to agree with them that that is of interest. I mean, if $60 million isn't a very good guess, and I know you have some reluctance, but do we have, maybe let's just go to the Keystone Pipeline, the eastern one. I mean, do we have a better idea now that that is closer to operation with the value, the taxable value of that might be?
I looked at this just recently. We have two counties where Day and Marshall County, where it's pretty much complete through there. And that's it. And we have assigned a value for that property, but I don't know exactly what it is. I don't know what our total valuation is for that section of pipeline. But I think it was the value that we have is almost all in Day and Marshall. There's a little bit down around Yankton. I believe that's right. There's a little bit of pipeline. I think it's around Yankton, maybe around Vermilion. I'm looking towards TransCanada, but I think there's almost all of it is in Day and Marshall County.
Understanding in your testimony, you explained the difficulties of assigning a value to this sort of thing in advance of it being operational. Would it be unreasonable for a person to presume that there'd be a strong correlation between the construction price of a new pipeline and its taxable value, at least in the early going?
Yes, I think it, that I don't think that would be a reasonable assumption to make.
Okay. So one more reason why I'm not in the taxation business, I guess, right? Okay.
It's remarkably complex.
Yeah. Do you have any examples or illustrations for this commission for other pipelines that are already in the ground, interstate pipelines, maybe natural gas pipelines, what they contribute to the tax base, and if you think those examples are helpful for this commission to consider? I mean, it may be that there are such differences between a natural gas pipeline and an oil pipeline that the comparisons aren't valid.
We have the total amount of the current pipeline valuation. I didn't think to bring it with me, but we have that information. We could calculate about how much taxes they pay as an industry, and I'm assuming it'll be quite significant.
Okay, thanks.
Questions, Commissioner Hansen? I don't know. Are you gonna have some follow up or something on that question Commissioner Colbeck had about the relationship between local taxation of the fee interest and otherwise, I think what I was going to do is just ask the parties whether they would have any objection to Mr. Kenyon supplementing his testimony if he's able to get us a definitive answer on that question.
I can clarify that point. Mr. Colbeck's question rather quickly, I think, if you'd like.
It may be to the commissioner's mind if Mr. Taylor offers his explanation of that.
I don't mind. You would know better than I would if that's legally consistent with what.
Well, I think I can do it on a question-answer basis.
Okay. Oh, okay. Oh, please do that. Yep, yep.
Mr. Kenyon, if the pipeline company purchased the fee of the right-of-way, then the fee of the right-of-way would be taken off the local tax rolls and the fee ownership interest would be assessed by your department as a central assessment, would it not?
That's right.
And in those instances where the right-of-way is in the form of an easement, or that is the right to install and operate the pipeline within the easement corridor, is there not a statute in South Dakota that says that in the valuation of the pipeline company's assets, you have to look at the value of the easement or the right to be in the ground coupled with the permanent improvements to the easement, and those are taxed to the pipeline company?
That's correct.
But the remainder interest that remains with the landowner, the right to use the property for all purposes except those reserved to the easement, are still taxed at the local level.
I'm not sure that's true. What I would want to double check is to make sure, because what we do when we locally assess something is we tell the directors of equalization in that county not to assess it. We say we've already assessed this. And I'm not sure how exactly that works with an easement. So I guess the answer to my question is I'm not entirely sure how that would work.
If it would be helpful, then I can caucus with Mr. Kenyon, show him the statutes, and we can figure that out, and you can submit that later.
Yeah, I just want to know if, yeah, that would be fine. If anyone, either party staff or, you know, I mean, it's staff's witness, but he's offered to supplement his testimony with a later submittal, and it seemed to me to be a good question to get answered.
We can provide that information in supplemental testimony.
And TransCanada would have no objection to him doing that?
No, not at all.
Subject, you know, if you have a disagreement with it, for your right to offer that.
Certainly, thank you.
Okay. Are there any other commissioner questions following up? Otherwise, staff?
No further questions.
Okay. Mr. Taylor, do you have any questions following up on the commissioner's questions?
No further questions.
Okay, I think you may step down then, Mr. Kenyon. Thank you. Staff, you may call your next witness.
I am done. I have no other witnesses to call.
Gee whiz. Okay, thank you very much. Are you ready? Do you have any rebuttal witnesses at this time, applicant?
We do. Mr. Moore is going to call John Schmidt to the stand. While he's doing that, I might state for the record that the applicant will clearly accept an ERP condition as found in the previous docket known as HP07-001. That was a question from the other day. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Hansen asked about a remotely controlled valve in its proximity to worst-case spill location. There is a remotely controlled, electrically driven valve. I believe it to be mainline valve 13 at milepost 361, which is approximately 5 miles downstream from that spill location.
Thank you very much for getting back to me on that. I appreciate it.
Pleasure. I'll turn the microphone over to Mr. Moore.
Mr. Smith, do you want the witness sworn?
You're already under oath. So the answer is no.
Okay, very good. Okay. Thank you. Dr. Schmidt, were you present during Dr. Arndt's testimony?
Yes.
And did you hear his testimony about alternative soil handling techniques?
Yes, I did.
And in particular, he talked about an alternative technique involving three lifts of soil. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
Could you just describe for the commission your understanding of what he was talking about?
If he was talking about the triple lift soil separation method during trenching, basically you have three horizons of soil. You look at it, A, at the surface, B, and C. And his testimony was talking about problematic soils, like the saline or sodic soils, and it's usually in horizon B. And so when you're trenching, you want to try and separate those. So the triple lift would actually entail more space because you would have to strip the topsoil across the right-of-way. You would then have to strip the horizon B off because usually the horizon C soils, the ones underneath, are good soils. So you don't want to have your equipment running up and down on this horizon B and mixing with the further subsoils. So you'd actually strip another layer. So now you're making your footprint significantly larger. And if you're on any kind of topography, you've got to account for side cuts on hills. So now you've got to make an even wider right-of-way. Does that describe the methodology to you clearly? Or?
Dr. Arndt recommended that particular alternative soil handling technique be used in all cases involving the problem soils that he described. Do you agree with that recommendation?
No. Like our topsoil stripping methodology, where we have three options that we discuss with the landowner, we would prefer to work with the NRCS to develop multiple methods so that when we go to the landowner, after we've consulted with the NRCS to develop our CONREC unit mapping through the area, we want to be able to have multiple options so that if a landowner wants us to strip topsoil across the whole right-of-way, then we want to be able to explain to him that to do so, we need a wider footprint through your pasture or prairie or whatever it is, and what the time would be to do that, versus some other options that the NRCS could develop that they could then pull from as far as what the footprint is. Because some ranchers particularly don't want a wider corridor. They just want you to come in and try and get it laid in a certain width. So I think it's to everybody's best interest, particularly the landowners, for us to have several options instead of having a prescriptive method. And so we would prefer to have the ability to work with the NRCS to develop methods. Certain soils, you could do different things. You may be able to do something just in the trench versus doing it across the whole right-of-way. I don't know what all those methods could be, but that consultation would be important with the NRCS.
Dr. Arndt also described a method of identifying where those problematic soils are that would require some alternative handling technique. And he talked about use of some kind of a probe. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, geoprobe technology.
Are there other methods of determining where those problematic soils are that TransCanada could also employ?
Yes, there are.
And in your view, is one better than the other?
They all have their advantages and disadvantages. So, again, we would want the ability to use multiple tools, not just one particular methodology.
Those are all the questions that I have. Thank you.
Thank you, staff, cross-examination.
No questions.
Okay, I'll commissioner questions of Mr. Schmidt.
If the commission were to adopt different methods or different ways of doing that, would the ultimate goal change? In other words, would you change your method to achieve different remediation or...
Well, the goal would still be the same, which would be to preserve the topsoil from the layer of soil that has problematic conditions in it. So the NRCS's job is to work with farmers and ranchers to deal with site-specific issues. So we feel it'd just be best to consult with them to come up with a methodology. You may have somebody with rolling hills, and that triple lift method could result in a right-of-way that might be almost 200 feet wide. That rancher has to decide that versus some other methods that the NRCS may develop. It depends on what the problematic soil layer is, first of all, because that'll dictate, what kind of issues you'll have during construction.
Okay.
So the goal isn't to change the protection. It's to allow the flexibility to do something that would allow you to have a methodology specific to that landowner's concerns.
Okay, and that was exactly my question. I probably didn't articulate it very well, but I just wanted to make sure that a different method wouldn't result in a lesser outcome.
That's not the goal.
Okay, thank you.
Were you here for Dr. Arndt's testimony?
Yes,
yesterday?
I was.
Am I right in recollecting that he mentioned that some of these soils that we're talking about in the B layer, that if they were brought to the top, could hinder revegetation?
If they're mixed with the topsoil, yes.
You have recommended that the commission not prescript a certain approach, but allow a suite of options. If the applicant gave the landowner an opportunity to have a triple lift, the landowner said, no, I don't want all this extra, right away. I just want the single. I just want the single soil segregation at the topsoil. If as a result of that decision, there was greater mixing of that B soils with the topsoil that hindered revegetation, would the landowner be liable for reduced crop or grazing area production in the out years?
I can't comment on the easements or how they're written, but TransCanada has already made a commitment in their application to revegetate and restore the right-of-way. So,
well, and I'm aware of that, and that's why I'm asking, because if we're talking about, well, we may cut these deals with these landowners. If they want this, then they need to give up this. I just want to make sure that I fully understand what all of this is.
Right. again, the alternative methods don't necessarily mean you're going to mix the topsoil and the B layer together. It just means that you may be able to do something, and I can't predict what the NRCS may come up with, but you will have another layer, method that may just focus on the trench and how to separate them in the trench and then separate them on the surface so that you don't ruin the topsoil layer, just that you don't have to do it across the entire right-of-way.
Well, I understand there may be other options. We just have testimony from an expert, you know, yeah. Dr. Arndt, that in his opinion, this triple separation is the best way to keep that B layer from mixing with the topsoil.
Under certain conditions, it can be. I mean, I've seen it used primarily in very flat agricultural land, like the Mississippi alluvial soils, where they, you know, you don't have a lot of constrictions on your right-of-way workspace. You've got a nice flat terrain, so you can manage the topsoil separation. But you get out to the western part of South Dakota where you have rolling hills, and you may have changes in what those restrictive soil layers are from one section of the guy's property to another. It may be sodic soils in one spot. It may be paralithic shales in another. And so that dictates how wide your trench is, how much space you need. All we're saying is we want the ability to work the issue specific to the landowner's property and not have a prescriptive method that may not fit everybody's property.
What about probing methods? You mentioned that there were different probing methods available. You didn't go into any specificity.
The tried and true method is a 2-inch soil auger. I've seen geoprobes break. If you get any kind of dense paralithic shale, you could snap that probe off as it's being pushed down into the ground. Again, you want to have a suite of tools to use when you're in the field, not something that is mandated that may not work in every situation.
So you've identified a weakness of the practice that Dr. Arndt indicated. Can you give me an example of a different probing method?
The 2-inch soil auger. Basically, they take, guy just cranks it down to different depths, takes it out, and you test the soil right there in the field.
Does going down only 2 inches?
Oh, no, it's a 2-inch probe at the end of the auger that you twist down in the ground, you put extensions on it. So you can.
That makes a lot more sense. Gotcha. All right. So that's more of a manual approach toward.
Correct. And we had issues using ATVs on landowners' property as well. I mean, we did our surveys in a manner that was least intrusive to them, and some landowners wouldn't let us use ATVs. So.
Thank you.
Any other commissioner questions? On that, you know, where he talked about, again, Mr. Arndt or Dr. Arndt about, I don't know if I ever quite got him pinned down as to whether he thought the probing should be done everywhere or in selected areas. But when you're doing it, if you got to be out there hand augering, is that going to be feasible to do that, you know, widely, or is that, or are you thinking that this level of testing is only needed in certain areas that can sort of be predefined using NRCS data, et cetera.
Exactly, the latter scenario. He did mention that. He said that the soil surveys are pretty broad, so you would have to work to define where those areas are and then do the testing in those areas, and that would be the intention.
Any other commissioner questions? Okay. At that point, I guess we're back to applicant. Do you have any follow-up then to the...
Just one. Dr. Schmidt, is it fair to say that TransCanada's interest is not in avoiding alternative soil handling techniques where they are necessary because of problematic soils, but rather not being locked into a particular alternative soil handling technique that may not work in every instance?
That's correct.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Staff?
No questions.
Thanks. I think you can step down. Um, applicant, call your next rebuttal witness.
Commissioners, I believe we've come to the end of the hearing. It's hard to believe that the words glacial till or tolling weren't put in the record, but then I guess perhaps now they just were. We appreciate your work over the course of the months leading up to this point. We appreciate the staff's hard work, Ms. Semler, Mr. Binder, Ms. Flitstoser, Mr. Solem, Mr. Knadel, and others have spent a tremendous amount of time putting us through the paces to get to this point. We look forward to the remainder of the docket. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And commissioners, any other business that you have right now? Staff, anything else?
No further business.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, at some point, we're going to have to talk things like briefing schedule and that, but since one of the parties isn't here, I suppose we should probably do that at a time when maybe on the phone, maybe via teleconference is a way to handle that. With that, subject to the supplemental evidence to be provided by Mr. Kenyon, the hearing, pardon me?
I think Mr.
Oh, there was one other witness.
Tom Kirschenman was going to provide you with some data, I believe, as well.
Yeah, he was, yeah, regarding just the brooding season, right, of the lease of the turn. Is that it? Yep. Okay, with that then, the subject to that, the hearing is adjourned.